Welcome to the Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm live. That the message you just heard from me was recorded. It promoted the Progressive Radio News Hour. PRN does that for its programs, and it's very nice to do it. I recorded that early last week, and I guess that will air every now and then. John McMurtry is back on today. It's always great to have John on. And let me start off with a few comments. I focus on so much, and John follows some of what I do, and he'll pick up on the comments that I make, and we'll continue for the rest of the hour. But I've been writing on a lot of things, the big issues strike me. I can't write about everything. I'm just one person, you know, two arms, two legs, two eyes, got to get enough sleep, rest, the rest of it. But I try to do what I can, and I manage to get out a fair amount. I have a new article this morning on Afghanistan. Dare I say, Obama and Hamid Karzai inspired it. You know who Hamid Karzai is. He's the U.S. puppet posing as the Afghan prime minister. He wasn't elected. He was installed. Washington gave him the job. He's a caricature of a leader. He's a stooge. He's
an oil executive.
Anyway, the title of my article is Permanent Afghanistan Occupation Planned. You know, Obama talks about a pullout. He's done it for the last 4 years. We're going to get him out by 2012. Well, we'll make it 2013. Well, how about 2014? Well, how about never? How about Korea? America showed up after World War, South Korea, after World War II. Still there. How about Japan? Still there. How about Germany? Still there. Italy? Still there. I could go on and on and on. Iraq will be occupied permanently. At least as long as I live, I imagine. Afghanistan, the same thing. The only places America pulls out of are ones that lose strategic importance. Make no mistake, Afghanistan has immense strategic importance. It's sort of, think of it this way, it's sort of a land-based aircraft carrier. It targets Russia and China, the last line of defense against U.S. imperialism. That's the real value of Afghanistan.
Pakistan, too. India.
Oh, Pakistan, oh, for sure. Yep. Well, of course, America didn't go to war with India, at least not yet.
No.
It certainly is waging war with Pakistan, and it has very dark thoughts in mind for Pakistan.
Afghanistan, as you say, is right at the core of it all. I've been through all that territory, and Afghanistan is adjacent to all of them.
Oh, it sure is.
China, course, India, Pakistan, and then, of course, Persia or Iran.
Oh, very much so.
Iran, it's huge.
And that's why they call it war.
Especially the oil going into the central, the old Soviet republics of Central Asia. That's really why it went in.
Sure. Afghanistan and Pakistan border each other.
Yeah,
so it's referred to as the AFPAC war. The AFPAC war, and America is at war with parts of Pakistan. You don't hear that in the news. Drone warfare, special forces on the ground doing what they do best. They're trained killers. That's what special forces are. CIA operate everywhere. I've written about how special forces operate in at least 120 countries globally, only 193 or 4 of them overall. John, this is really outrageous stuff. I wrote about that. I wrote about I've got two articles coming out on Israel tomorrow. Let me just mention that. There's an Israeli election coming up on the 22nd of January. I believe that's a week from this coming Tuesday. I read about the Israeli elections.
Oh,
they veer so far to the right. Polls favor Netanyahu and his extremist, racist coalition partners. It looks for sure like he's going to stay prime minister. He's a fascist, and that's the title of my article. I called it Netanyahu, the Face of Israeli Fascism. Oh, that's a second article. The other article I just titled Israeli Elections, and I go over the various parties and the people involved in them, heading them. There isn't a major party worth a damn in Israel. The minor ones, the ones that'll get one seat, two seats, 120 seats in the Israeli Knesset, no party ever wins a majority. So So a coalition government always rules Israel. A poll I saw not too long ago, I think it had the Netanyahu coalition getting something like 34 seats. It bumps along. It could go up a couple, down a couple. They won't win enough, so they need to ally with other hardline secular and religious parties.
Well, his biggest rising opposition is even more fascist than he is.
Oh.
And he, is, of course, is the son of the secretary of the Stern Gang. And the new one is an ex-paratrooper and is even more extreme. He talks about the greater Israel quite openly and taking it all right to Iraq. And he's rising up in the polls. You've got to wonder about what's happening with the people of Israel. I mean, how does that happen? 25% of their people are in poverty. As they wage this permanent war to expand the greater Israel, they're dispossessing their own people. And of course, you know, Steve, at all the pattern I've been tracking since my world trip, I went around the world backpacking in 1991, 92. And 93, I guess it was 92, 93, and I honestly saw it all coming, and that's when I really got into writing what I, you know, the books that you've mentioned often on this program. That's when it all started, because one could see it coming. But the thing that the most dramatic, to compel a book of analysis, books of analysis into a one frame, it's transnational corporate right treaties from NAFTA to the Maastricht Treaty of the European Union, which has just completely corporatized the European Union into a transnational base, to the, you know, World Trade Organization itself. All of that started overriding, and it started off, by the way, with the free trade agreement, the so-called free trade agreement between Canada and the U.S. That started it in 1988. And then that's when I, you know, saw it happening all across the world, and it's all by treaty, which basically dictates. And the dictates all add up to, almost nobody reads them. I've read them. They're thousands of pages long, and there's only one right protected throughout all of them, and that's the right to transnational corporations to profit. And every single regulation is for that. But they still had, the problem was, you know, we need oil now, and as we come towards 2001, it seems like it's all locked up. But there's uprisings happening across the world. It started in Seattle a few weeks before 9/11. There was over a million people in Genoa from around Europe and the world demonstrating against these corporate right treaties that were destroying peoples and the world and their economic bases and their social infrastructures. And we had a new president being elected who wasn't really elected at all. It was a stolen election, and he was obviously a bimbo. But not only a bimbo, but somebody who promised to turn the clock back. He thought the New Deal was all a mistake. And then behind him still, we had the Rockefellers and so forth, and he's already been planning. They've already been planning. This banker, and as he puts it, a banker and intellectual elite is surely preferable. A supranational sovereignty of bankers and intellectual elite is surely preferable to the self-determination of nations practiced in past centuries. They've had it all planned. 9/11 was the turning point, because that gave them the right, ultimately, it gave them the right to override all law whatsoever. American law, constitutional law, as you know, I mean, you've written so much about it. We had not only the Patriot Act, but we had the Military Commissions Act, we had the Defense Authorization Act, and it's basically, as you've pointed out again and again, these are all basically the rights of a police state. That is, that they can do anything to anybody with nobody able to stop it, including grabbing a Canadian citizen. Like, now this is an interesting story, because it reveals the nexus within the nexus within the nexus. You've heard about Mahar Arar. He's an engineer who happens to have been born in the Middle East, And he's just, you know, a very productive guy, because there's been a whole commission since. He was seized. He was seized by under this new anti-terrorism legislation, is always a reverse projection onto the victims of what you're doing to them. And you know where he was sent? And this, to me, is very interesting about Syria. He was sent to Syria. Yep. To be tortured for nothing. You know, maybe he had an association that they suspect. I don't know, because they did a whole commission on him that indicated absolutely no ties or anything whatsoever. He was a completely innocent guy. What he did is symbolize that you can now, and you've written about this so often, you can now seize anybody, now including American citizens, and Obama's right behind it. You can now seize them, and you can now execute them. You can now torture them. You can now do anything you want under all these police state laws that are out there. Now, this is what happened in Syria, and it's a bit like Libya, you know. Libya sucked up to the West and NATO and tried to restore relations and so forth, and that was just the occasion, and he was doing the same thing. He was taking rendition people and torturing them on behalf of the West, and then Syria was doing it, and Arar has testified that his understanding of it is that the U.S. itself, its covert state, had used Syria, and Syria was trying to please the U.S. covert state by torturing people that sent to them, these kidnapped, innocent, productive citizens that just, they do it. And it's not just meaningless, it's to terrorize the whole world. He was 10 months. I mean, remember this when you talk about Syria, and we are, you know, it is now, they've now flooded death squads into it. I mean, it's called the Salvador option, by the way, you know, where you put in death squads, you kill hundreds of thousands of people, literally, overall, and you terrorize people into absolute submission. And it's called the Salvador option, and the same guy, Negroponte, who was behind it from Honduras and so forth, is now has run it in Iraq, and now they're transporting it to Syria. And we're just aghast, and my God, what's going on here? This thing will not stop. Not one part of it could have happened without 9/11. And that's the astonishing thing, that all of this was permitted, that now you can override all law, domestic and foreign, and the death squads and so forth. And what it comes down to always is a single program. By the way, in Syria, he was tortured for 10 months. He was strapped to an electrified metal chair every day for 10 months and tortured and hit with cables. You know, these things don't leave the marks that indicate the torture that's been undergone. What for? Nothing, except to terrorize. And only by luck do we have any, you know, we had an honest judge here, Dennis O'Connor, who's actually the best judge in the country. He did the investigation on it, and this is what we discovered. So Syria was in on it. Syria was submitting to this reign of global terror. And that reign of global terror is for the supranational sovereignty of money sequences. And you can go right back to the moral DNA of it. And this is the one that as a moral philosopher, has fascinated me in the sense of riveted me into inquiry for years, because moral philosophers and even social philosophers, they will not go into the level of collective value systems. It's just not done. They won't go down that far. They'll only go to the individual level in moral philosophy and ethics. They don't have institutional analyses of, you know, what the system morality is. What is the ruling system morality? And it goes right back to the inner sanctum of, because I also read the inner sanctum of these theoretical tomes that come out from game theory to John Rawls to whatever, and to Hayek, to all those people. I've read them all, and I've read all their former literature, and what it all comes down to, and it's behind everything, and 9/11 and all the death squads and the rest of it, are just an implementation of the ultimate meta-program, the moral DNA of the system. By the way, this is when we got, my voice went got interrupted last time when I started talking about what this inner program was, the matter program, the moral DNA of the entire system. And everything you talk about, Steve, follows from this axis of equations.
John, can I throw one thing in?
Yeah, please.
I just learned this shortly before airtime, a Press TV report, and the report had stated today, and the report headlines, Obama's kill list critic found death in New York City. I'm unfamiliar with this young man's name, but Press TV calls him a prominent American blogger, a computer prodigy. His name is Aaron Schwartz. He spoke out prominently against Obama's kill list. I wrote about his kill list. It's also called the disposition matrix. Simple. Obama, on his own authority, can say, I want so-and-so killed.
Yeah,
it could be anybody
can.
Anywhere in the world. It could be a U.S. citizen. And police found him dead in his apartment in Brooklyn. And a medical examiner, a fraud, obviously, he ruled his death a suicide by hanging. Now, what motive would a guy who actively is engaged in exposing important disturbing practices, why on earth would he want to hang himself? Well, he didn't hang himself. He was murdered. You know, it may be tough to prove, but there's no doubt in my mind he was murdered, John.
Well, what I mean, this is shocking, but what, you know, I worry about you, Steve, but you're holding foxy enough that I don't know whether they dare touch you, because certain points that it becomes, he's younger, you see, he hasn't made a reputation, he isn't, I mean, you didn't really know about him before. It at a certain point, the strategic, this all comes down to strategic rationality. And what they call strategic rationality, and right in the inner sanctum of all the mathematical games, strategic theory, economics, social justice, all of this, it all comes down to a principle of rationality that drives the whole system. And this is not the rationality of Plato or the rationality of any age before 1945, basically. And it's just become more and more articulated into basically what I call the cancer system. Rationality is not taking things into account in an impartial way and serving everybody's interests as we might think of rationality in our own way if we're sane. Rationality means only self-maximizing choice. And that is the given. That is the primary assumption of all economic theory, all game theory, all strategic calculation, legal suits, everything that you talk about and more comes down to what rationality is, and it all proceeds in a rational way. What is self-maximizing choice to make? So the only thing that counts by definition in the whole program, it goes deeper than a moral DNA, it's the very DNA of the mind. That the only thing that is rational, the only thing that is reasonable is to maximize your own interests to as far as possible. There's no limit to it. The only limit to it is that other people have self-interest they want to maximize, and so they enter into a competition, and it's a competition of all against all and self-maximizations, and the invisible hand and the market God turns everything into an optimum. This superstition, this religion is built into the whole thought system, Steve, of the U.S. empire. And everybody who follows it, including Canada. Well, what that means for the U.S., which has been the most powerful country, of course, it's in decline, and this is why, you know, a state, strikes out everywhere, so it's become ever more murderous. This follows then from rationality equals self-maximizing choice equals, therefore, the U.S. seeks, and this is what all, every state planner, Obama himself, everybody inside the covert system, they take us for granted that the U.S. will seek to rule in all matters of U.S. interest. And there's no limit to what U.S. interests are. That's the development. That's history. There's no limit to what the U.S. interests are, and they're going to seek to maximize and rule in all matters of their interests. Therefore, it follows deductively. And you know, it's like, this isn't something a matter of choice any longer. This is just a deductive stream that pours out like a computer, and the thing is you have to decode it. Therefore, all U.S. corporations and executives, the executive state is, you know, it represents the corporations, transnational corporate money sequences as a collective. It seeks to maximize control, therefore, of all the major things that matter to those transnational money sequences by the very meta program that's built into the society's thought system itself. Therefore, it seeks to maximize control of world oil supply, strategic armed force positions, land for industrial agriculture, mass media projection, and scientific and political assets. This, too, you see, has been controlled. Rockefeller brought in, and others, brought in, they controlled the whole, I'm not sure whether you know about this, but they controlled basically the development of economics and social science into this format of self-maximizing atoms, and, you know, corporate persons maximizing their interests, and since the U.S. is the proper ruler of the world, you go with no limit. And we see Iraq after 9/11. Iraq is a demonstration of all of those things. You know, it's the oil, the industrial agriculture. They force them into GMOs. It's the mass media projection. Always a reverse projection onto the victim of what you're doing yourself. Weapons of mass destruction, terror, and so forth. That's what you're doing. So you blame the victim for it as an excuse for destroying them. And we have the control of their thought system now in place. And then, of course, people are going to resist this, just as we've seen. People resisted in Syria. People resisted in Iraq. People resisted in Iran. People resisted in Afghanistan. Well, they're the terrorists. They must be overcome. And then everything is actually to execute this formula that lies at the heart of the mind of the very nation under its covert state control and under a character like Obama, who, as you properly say, is a pure opportunist, and he's a pure opportunist at this. So we have to plan, and this is where 9/11 comes in as such an important turning point before 2008 when they take over the financial, whole world's financial system by hollowing it out. So you're going to plan, and it comes right out. It follows rationally and deductively, and is in America's best interest that we must have full-spectrum dominance, and full-spectrum dominance throughout the world. And so that's going to mean Africa, that's going to mean the Middle East, and that's going to mean Asia, Central Asia in particular. That's going to mean to begin every place that's got oil, like Libya had oil, like Somalia has oil, which we don't hear about, like Syria has discovered some oil, like Iraq, everywhere they go now, oil is the primary prize, but not the only prize. And it's all rational. It all follows deductively. It's all, you're a fool if you don't do this. This is the nature of reality. And so you basically get money, transnational money sequences, uber always, with anybody in the way made war upon. And now with 9/11, you can drop bombs on them, and anything goes. You can assassinate people inside your own country. The rule of law itself, the rule of life protective law in particular, has been suspended. It has been overridden. Then, of course, it goes, the next move is what you've been following too, is on the social, you call it properly, I think, the real social contract. The social contract where a society, where its government represents the common life interests of the people, and therefore people's needs of life are going to be served if they're not in a position to do it themselves because of, basically, the transnational money sequence systems, which have just exported all the money offshore one way or another, betting on futures of food or anything but actually doing productive enterprise. This is why it's a cancer system. And so it follows, as you recently wrote, that over $4 trillion is going to come out of the whole social infrastructure of the country. Life support systems at the natural level, life support systems at the social level, life and means of life at all levels are matter nothing to this calculus. And so it's a meta program that's built in, but I don't know anybody who recognizes this. We recognize it, we approve of it, but the thing is we're dealing with a mechanism that is right in the thought structure of the system itself. What we're doing is we're fighting all the symptoms of it. But we've really got to come to grips with this DNA of the system itself, which is, well, it has all, as I've mentioned often before and spelled it out, and I won't do it again today, it has all the characteristics of a cancer at the global level of life organization, because it produces nothing. It only destroys life and means life. It all seems fine because we're still making profit. That's the only thing that matters, the self-maximizing of the transnational money sequences. And so it can devour the whole world. And nothing, all we can see is the symptoms of it and wondering what has gone wrong. This is an evil beyond which we've never seen before.
John, another way to describe it is to call it an Andromeda strain. You know, it literally is metastasizing globally, and nobody so far has figured out a way to stop it. And it's absolutely destroying everything in its path. It's ruthless. It's destructive.
It's a mechanism.
It's indeed.
Well, we've got to recognize it as on the micro level of a cancer. Andromeda strain isn't too specific. It's a cancer in all its hallmark characteristics. And the only thing that works at the micro level is, you know, why the cancer, we have cancer running through our veins all the time. There are cancer cells, but they get selected out. The local immune system, as we call it, defense system of the organism, recognizes it and gets rid of it. And, you know, it's a wonderful process, actually, and the same thing should be happening at the social level and at the global level. We recognize that we have a cancer program that's proliferating and destroying all the organic life around it and its bases in order to grow itself and multiply itself without inhibition. We don't recognize what the metaprogram, the DNA, is at just as the micro, you know, if the host doesn't recognize it, if the individual person does, you know, his defense system, immune system doesn't recognize the cancer, and that I've had cancer a few times, and that's, I know, right from the beginning, is that you have got to get your immune system to recognize it before it hits the marrow, because once it's in the marrow, and I'm afraid it may be at that level now, once it's at the marrow, it's pretty, you're going to have a hard time stopping it. The key is to recognize it and know exactly what it is. I mean, we have a hard time on the micro level. They know a lot about cancer. They know how it operates, but they can't figure out the cause. Well, the cause is the same cause as on the social level. It's the transnational money sequence system to more that multiplies and metastasizes itself over all life requirements whatsoever and kills it, kills its life host. And we don't know what causes it because we haven't taken it outside the body to what's causing the lung cancer, for example. Well, the main cause of it has been cigarettes. It took 40 years to recognize that the cigarettes were, but they don't call it that. You know what the scientists call it? They call it tobacco. Or they'll call it, any other carcinogen that's out in the outer world, and that now they're recognizing that 90% or more, they now know that none of the, basically under 5%, maybe under 2% of all microcancers, that means at the organic level, are caused by, genetically caused. They're mutations within the body. What's caused those mutations? We don't make the step. What's caused the mutations is the junk and toxins that we're pouring into our bodies that are being mass marketed by the transnational money sequences. The same cancer on the social level of life organization, the transnational money sequencing that goes on with no committed function to anything, life function to anything except to maximize and multiply itself, those same sequences are causing the cancer at the endogenous, at the organic, at the micro level. It's the same thing. And it's not just causing the cancers, it's causing all non-communicable diseases. The non-communicable diseases are diseases that are spread not by infection. They're just, they're spread by, They're spread by the transnational money sequence system itself and its commodities, and this big step has not been taken either. I hear
the
music.
Absolutely, John. And of course, my two books, I stress that. The real power in America and most other countries, certainly the Western ones, is money power. Money power.
Money sequence power, because money power is too vague, I think. We'll get back to it, Steve.
Anyway, you're right, John. Let's take a quick break, and we'll come back. Welcome back. A couple of quick comments, John. PRN indeed is moving forward. My understanding is that PRN gets on the order of 7,000 new listeners every week globally. I have to believe that this program gets its share. My program, I'm very grateful for it, is one of PRN's most popular. It's because of my guests like John McMurtry and others and the topics we discuss. John, I usually don't find a new topic until I begin doing my usual due diligence research at the beginning of the day. But just before airtime, as I mentioned, Aaron Schwartz and the fact that I have no doubt on my mind that the dark forces of America murdered him. Tomorrow I'm going to write about him. And one other thing, John, when you talk about money sequencing power, indeed, you are so right.
Yeah.
Money sequencing power to make more of it.
Yeah. At a transnational level. The big thing that's happened, Steve, and what distinguishes it from past money power is that it's now free of all borders and all laws. And it has written right into trade edicts, dictates the right of transnational money sequences to profit opportunities as the sole right and objective of the entire system. So that takes more than just money power. That takes transnational money sequencing, because it never stays, it's being manufactured, the money demand itself is being manufactured all the time and spreading transnationally with no limit to it, and that is the nature of the cancer, because it behaves that way. So I think it's well to get it. We never had this problem before. We never, by the way, had cancers before capitalism. They didn't exist as an epidemic anywhere. And we've had rising cancers, but not only rising cancers, we never really had much of non-communicable diseases before, like diabetes or like mental illness and so on. We had bits and pieces, but not epidemics. All these non-communicable diseases, which are killing more people than all infectious diseases, they're killing more people than everything else put together, these non-communicable or non-infectious diseases. Every one of them can be traced back to transnational money sequencing.
Oh, sure can, John. It's been a while, I think a couple of years now, but I once wrote an article about the politics of cancer. Again, I mean, the points that you raise. There never was a cancer epidemic if you go back far enough, but now the big corporate interests in league with complicit politicians. I mean, there's a cancer
industry.
It's another
business. It becomes another business.
Oh, it's a business. That's right. So, it is really incorrect to talk about a healthcare industry. It's a sickness industry.
Yeah.
That's
yes.
what it is.
Yes. Produce the sickness and then grind more money out of treating its symptoms.
I think it's well known
inside the strategic planning that of course we do that. It's called, this is a free market, this is market miracles. It uses the same language as as the old peddlers of snake oil, only it's on a world level. Because as soon as cigarettes started dropping in North America, we had the free trade so-called edicts that required the other societies like Japan to accept the cigarettes, to accept the basically they're not it's not tobacco at all. It's a deliberate carcinogenic. Well, they don't as it is a carcinogen, and it's deliberately constructed full of poisons to alarm the immune system and break it down so it isn't just cancer but heart disease and all kinds of other things happen. Japan knew perfectly well what was happening. It wouldn't allow the advertising of young girls smoking cigarettes saying, be your own person, baby, that kind of thing. and they didn't want the cigarettes coming through and addicting their people and causing a vast health emergency, as always happens with this mass manufacture. Then the U.S. trade representatives just said, well, Clayton Reuter, he said, we've had a marvelous success story with tobacco or cigarettes. What a marvelous success story. Everything that's been lost in market here has been doubled and tripled and multiplied elsewhere. So Japan, why would Japan do that? Why would China do it? Well, they're in on the action, too, because this is how they get their access to the U.S. markets. It's the trade for of cars for poisons. The Japan representative said, we have blood on our hands. They knew what it, but well, how are they going to stop it? Because they require their export of cars. And so this is, it goes down all the way down, Steve. It just, there's no place that isn't at work. And then, of course, with the meltdown of 2008, once you had 2001 get away with it, so-called 9/11 call emergency for help, once you had that happen, that construction happened, no laws inhibit this transnational money sequence cancer. And so now we have no money inhibits it either, because we just took it all. We just flooded false securities through your entire economic system of Europe. Now you're buggered. You are dependent on us. You can't ever pull out of it. And it's the same thing happened in the U.S. This is why we're having all the crushdown on $4 trillion of being taken out of social infrastructures, is because they gave all the money away to Wall Street. And Wall Street isn't giving credit. Wall Street's just betting the money and continuing to collect debt servicing with money they just got from government and leveraged themselves into motion. They're not performing any function at all except eating away the social body. But how much do we ever get that connection? I mean, it's unbelievable. It all happens after 2008 in the U.S. and Europe. All of a sudden, all of the traditional social programs, far more developed than Europe, are suddenly no longer there. Suddenly, people, their pensions are being taken away, their unemployment, their wages are being reduced, their benefits are being destroyed. All of this stuff is going on. It's a cancer, and it has been exported. It has metastasized through the 2000 meltdown. If you can do it militarily and overall law, with impunity, why not do it at the financial level? We've got it already set up. So you just flood the false securities. Those false securities themselves, by the way, Japan, you remember, had a lot of money from all its productive sales, you know, from producing all those good cars. It had produced a lot of money, didn't know what to do with it, so it put it in to banking, and that was the worst thing that ever happened. They'll never pull out of it because the banking, you know, they just started speculating it away, and now they're in huge debt, mind you, to their own people. But, you know, it's been inertia ever since. It's been a kind of a comatose economy ever since. And the way that happened, their loans went bad on them, and they really couldn't do anything about it. The U.S. didn't, you know, their home loans, because it was a big, as always, almost always, there seems to be a big housing bubble, big speculation on property and houses. And the prices go up, 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 up. Almost all the places that have fallen, you know, had a financial crisis that started with a housing bubble, you know, again, non-productive, just getting more and more money sequencing out of what you haven't contributed a bit to, and then it goes up and up and up, and everybody's trying to get in on the cancer action, and then, of course, it collapses the capacities to go on doing it. The U.S. made a rule saying you had to have reserves, okay, for the money that you lent. They did it through the BIS, and you know the Bank of International Settlements, what it is. It's Wall Street writ global. And so they made a rule that you had to have to prevent the sort of housing crisis that we've, housing bubbles. And then what they did was they went on doing all the lending money, you know, where money, you know, it's a wash with credit. You're giving credit to everybody, basically, to get these false securities. They changed it from mortgages. They just changed the name from mortgages to securities, and so avoided the legislation they imposed on others and destroyed them while they and then managed to destroy the rest of the world through their false securities in the trillions that they've poured out in, through Europe in particular. And that's why Europe's in crisis. But where do you see in Europe? You never see the connection being made in Europe. They don't even mention public versus private banks. I mean, Europe has, unfortunately, it's just become a private bank feeding trough plus a corporate, because they've taken over the whole European Union, both at the central bank and at the social state of Europe has now been taken over. It's now a cancer state. So, I mean, we really are in trouble. And then Latin America, you think, well, it's shown a way out. Like, it's come out of basically a comatose state with all the death squads and the rest of it to reform and so on. And, it's been called the Latin American Revolution because of all the changes it's made that are, you know, towards... First of all, keep Wall Street out. That was one of the first things that Brazil did when Lula came into power. You have to have a presidential directive to set up any new financial business here in Brazil. And then they wouldn't get him money. They were doing this and that. And he said, well, $500 billion we're investing of public money based on public resources.
John,
they pulled out. Now they're going to, who knows, she's got cancer. Well, that's Argentina, and that's Venezuela. Now they're getting strange cases of cancer, these leaders.
Oh, indeed. So I've written a lot about Venezuela lately, especially since Chavez's cancer resurfaced.
That's worrying, Steve.
Yeah,
boy,
I'm very concerned. I'm very concerned. 4 cancer surgeries in 18 months.
Yeah, I don't see how he can survive. I just hope he survives long enough to keep the party in power.
Oh, I think the party will stay in power, John. I don't see any threat to the ruling party, the PSU, Majority Party, United Socialist Party of Venezuela. I think it'll stay in power short and intermediate term. You know, longer term, there's no way to tell. Nobody can predict longer term. But Chavez was operated on for the fourth time on December 11th in Cuba. He's getting first-class care. Cuba has a healthcare system that matches America. You know, America may have some experts that may be...
Well, it's got a much better one, really.
Well, overall, I mean, they have universal health care. Everybody gets health care.
They've got a lot. They're better on the stats of baby deaths and age, longevity, and diseases. They don't have any non-communicable diseases, which are running rampant through from diabetes to cancer to mental illness.
I compared the two countries, John. Again, it was months ago. It might have been as long as 2 years ago. But I compared health care in Cuba and America, and Cuba pretty much beat America on the basic health statistics. You know, like mortality, child mortality, and the other incidences of disease. And I mean, everybody can get care. You know, if you're rich enough in America, you can get the best care money can buy. But you can be impoverished in Cuba and get excellent medical care. Well, Chavez is at the main hospital in Havana. They're giving him superb care. You know, I mean, they're not miracle workers. And, nobody knows exactly what the situation is.
Yeah.
But I'm very concerned about it, and I write about Bolivarianism, which is really the progressive policies that he instituted at the beginning of 1999. The way he did it, John, he did it the way a Democrat does it. He went to the Venezuelan people, and he asked them, would you prefer a new constitution be drafted?
Yeah.
I mean, Venezuela was a cesspool of corporate corruption and power and the rest of it. From 1980 to 1988, real personal income, which is for the majority of Venezuelans, 20 years, it dropped 14%.
Yeah.
It's risen impressively under Chavez, but he first asked the Venezuelan people by referendum, would you like a new constitution?
Right.
It passed overwhelmingly.
Right.
A new one was drafted. It went to a national referendum. It passed overwhelmingly.
Right.
It's got stuff in the constitution Americans can't even imagine. Free health care, free education, subsidized housing, indigenous rights, women's rights, all kinds of stuff.
Pensions.
Pensions.
Without a paying job, if you're like a mother. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I wrote a new article. I thought I'd get it out tomorrow, but I'm going to hold it back.
Well, I think I'm glad you're in on that because it's been really, well, other than the Nordic countries, Scandinavia, I mean, Norway knows how to do it. They're out of the European Union. You know, they won't have anything to do with it in the sense of joining in and getting their financial taken over by the European Wall Street Bank. They just hold on the same thing. But just before I leave what you were saying, what that this referendum thing, this democratic process, this is new, you see, what Latin America has done. And, you know, instead of a revolutionary war where you try to take over the state in the traditional way, and then you get the death squads and the mass murders and everything happen, you have another way. You do it wholly democratically. And that's what Chavez led, and all of them have done it. This is what how Ecuador, who's got a good economist, by the way, as his president, he just had referendum, you know, on all these issues that the business class would always, and the foreign transnational money sequence would always scream and yell about, taking away their freedom and returning to despotism, and it's a new dictatorship, blah, blah, blah. Forever they do this. And just said, well, let's ask the people. Or he asked the people first, like Chavez did. And so he did one thing after another. So instead of the 12% share of the profits, I'm sorry, he said to the oil companies, there's 18 of you here, we're going to be taking now the public from its publicly owned resources, going to be asking, or actually requiring, 88% instead of 12% of the profits. Now, if you don't like that, you're free to leave, and you will leave with compensations. If you don't, that's the new terms. Norway did the same thing. And they, you know, they always scream and yell about you'll lose all investment and so on. No, you've got the resource. You've got the investment base. And so, and then he put taxes up, you know, and enforced the taxes. No tax avoiding thing you've written about, too. They're $26 trillion, far more than all the social sectors of the world, are being of tax evading of corporations and corporate rich in offshore hideaways. I mean, it's just unbelievable. No, you can't do that anymore. He got more money out of the income tax than he did just enforcing it than he did out of the oil. And Norway's done the same thing. If you come in here and don't obey our laws, they said, to the big oil men who are, of course, you know, could come in with their lobby group of big, powerful bullies. And he said, you'll be arrested and you'll be in jail and your assets will be seized. So you make your decision, but that's what's going to happen to you. Little Norway. And little Ecuador. They can all do it. They can't stop it once the people recognize what's gone wrong, that really this system is a disease. It's a killing disease, and it must be. What we do is we stand for the life requirements of the people, the common life interests of the people. We stand with it with policy. We stand with it with taxes. We stand with it with allocations. We stand with it with investments. We stand with it with rules about what you can do and can't do. The rule of life protective law is reintroduced. We have referenda to consult the people if you don't like it, and we win. And well, that can happen. It's already happened. It happened. That's what happened after 45, 30. Basically, the hidden war that was going on after 45 and during the 30s, the war was over the system. And Roosevelt resolved it in the U.S. way, and Europe solved it with a much more developed social state. And it's already worked. It's the only thing that's worked. They even had much higher growth, twice the rate of growth. It's the only thing that works. What the Latin Americans have introduced is a situation that was even worse than a war-torn Europe, because it all comes down basically to human life capital about what you can do. And they know that, and they start investing in it. And they consult the people through the referenda and so forth, and they do what we know works, the only thing that ever has worked, and what has been cancer destroyed by this transnational money sequencing system with no life protective law or limit.
Oh, indeed so, John. Indeed so. I just noticed a little blurb. The president of Argentina is in Havana visiting with Fidel and Raul Castro, and also to wish...
Cristina Kirchner.
Krishna, exactly.
Yeah.
And certainly to stand in solidarity with Hugo Chavez and wish him, she had her own battle with cancer. I saw a picture of her on a website. I mean, she looks brimming with health.
So she has, and you worry, as Chavez is worried about whether they're, finding a way of giving him cancer like they gave it to Arafat. He was murdered by cancer. But, you put polonium 210 or something, and you just put a little on your clothes or somewhere in the food, and you get a dead person.
Oh, that's exactly right. Yes, Arafat, there's no question that Israel murdered Arafat. They poisoned him polonium. I wrote twice about it. I wrote about it some years ago from his own doctor. His own doctor didn't believe the official story. I mean, he just thought it was an absolute bald-faced lie. I mean, Arafat's doctor for 25 years, personal physician, knew him as well as anybody from a medical standpoint, and Israel murdered him. And Chavez himself, years ago, absolutely, he said, and I quoted him in the past in articles, that America wanted him dead, and he worried that they might find a way to kill him. And I quoted Fidel Castro getting together with Chavez, telling him, watch what you eat. The Americans, they targeted Castro hundreds of times.
Yeah.
They never killed him. They came close a few times, but they never killed him. But Fidel was warning Chavez, be careful what you eat. Be careful what you do this. Be careful what you do that. They're after you. They're targeting you. They'll do anything to get you. So Chavez was well warned. I don't know. Maybe they did find a way to get him inflicted with cancer. I mean, four times. I mean, who knows what's going on?
Yeah.
Very, very
certainly
sad.
It falls in. They're certainly capable of doing it in accordance with the moral DNA of the covert criminal state. It's certainly capable of doing that and worse. I mean, track the death squads and the Salvador option going on now in Syria, for which you have done. They're capable of anything. And it's all in terms of this is rational strategic planning in a real politic way. This is the real world. It's money and treasure and blood. And that's the way the world works. That's what a great nation must do to be great, blah, blah, blah. And they are, they're like fanatics. And funny, the mirror image of the fanatics that we find in the Islamic madmen cut everybody's limbs off type of it's just a mirror image of the madmen, and they're absolutely certain that what they're doing is right. They're certain what they're doing is right on both sides. What we have is no exposure of it. Of course, the press is just an advertising vehicle for the transnational money sequence cancer. And so it never, the contradiction between it and the health and well-being of the people is not something that it will ever allow into its pages, except if it's going to be a brief marketing site where you can sell more newspapers for it for a moment. They'll bring Chomsky on, which I noticed the New York Times did bring Chomsky on recently to talk about who was the real threat in the Middle East. And it was very sensible. It was very reasonable. But it was, they pulled all its teeth, really. And that'll be the end of Chomsky. He's never been in the New York Times for years and years. He can only get published in Canada. And so we have this, the second order level of the disease is the consciousness of it. And that's our crucial problem. And but by the way, you are such a. Next week, I'd like to talk about your book, which I'm almost finished reading. It's superb, but also your daily articles. You're onto it. You're onto it. All the symptoms are coming out. All the symptoms. All we need to do is really connect it back to what the DNA of this cancer system is, everywhere. Thank you, Steve.
Oh, indeed so, John. Indeed so. It literally obsesses me. It obsesses you. You've been at this much longer than I have. I began, I was always concerned, but I really began following my more formal life, my working life. It began for me, John, reading important books when I retired. I'll just say briefly, I couldn't stand the thought of going fishing or doing things like that. And I began reading important books like your books. And my proudest possession is my library. It's just stacked with wonderful books. And when I found an author that I liked, I wanted to read everything that person wrote.
And that's what really inspired me to get going. And it was an accident that I got into what I'm doing now. But it's an obsession now, and I can't stop, and I absolutely won't stop. If the dark forces, the bastards, want to get me, they know where I am. But there's certainly the only way they're going to shut me up is to kill me.
Let's call it sustained intention, Steve, not obsession. Sustained intention for justice and truth.
Oh, indeed. Sustained intentions are just a plain old garden variety commitment, John.
Yeah.
The same one that you have. I look forward to getting you back. I'll send you an email off air, and I'll remind my listeners before we get off, because the next one's waiting to get on. We are on every Friday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time on weekends, Saturday and Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, live, or you can listen archived. Tune in. Make it a regular habit.